This is a Pinball News production.
Thanks, Rob. So, obviously, I feel a little bit like Clint Eastwood right now. So there he is, my special guest, Ward Pemberton. He will never live this down. So this is called Winging It. When your special guest doesn't arrive and the whole show is kind of leaning on that guy, we're going to wing it. But we're going to have fun. Don't worry about it. First of all, I want to start by thanking Michael from Germany. Came all the way from Germany and grabbed a Dunkin' Donuts coffee for me today. So I might not be here without a Dunkin' Donuts coffee. So thank you, Michael. Appreciate that. So the gist of the show was going to talk to Ward about not only Fathom, but other games that he designed. So we'll get started here. I titled the seminar, Help Surface Fathom. Oh, well, thanks for not showing up, Ward. So I titled it Help Surface Fathom. This was back in the day when we were just starting out with speech in games. And the way we were getting the speech, it was really weird because it was just like short little words, not even sentences half the time, but just words. We were getting it, I think, from Texas, from Texas Instruments or something. I don't know if anybody remembers. Somebody's going to know more than I do at this seminar. But and it was just weird because all the speech cues would kind of get clipped together, you know, randomly, and it was odd. So I think there is a speech call that says, help, surface, fathom, and it's like all disconnected and weird. But anyway, that was back in the early days of, you know, what we did. So we got Fathom, we got BMX, we got Hardbody, and we've got Gilligan's Island. So those are the four things we're going to talk to Ward about someday. I worked on all four of these. On Gilligan's, I was more of kind of an overseer of things and helped Ward kind of put the theme together and connect it to the game itself. But I didn't do the art. John Yousey did the art for Gilligan's Island. But we'll talk about those other ones too in a minute. So what's the big deal? I wanted to get feedback here today, and this is not me fishing for compliments. I have received more compliments for this game, for the art package on this game, than any other game I've ever worked on. So I'm not fishing for compliments here. This is like, what's the big deal? I mean, why is this game, why has it become the holy grail of collectors' games? I know, I've heard the answers, it's pretty, it plays good, blah, blah, blah. But I just wondered, does anybody off the top of their head have a Urus? Well, thank you. Like I said, I wasn't fishing for compliments, but there's one. Thanks. I agree. When Ward worked on that game, it definitely had a nice feel to it, a nice flow. Dave? Right. Yeah, and I always give credit where credit is due. Paul Ferris, the art director at Bally at the time, took an interest in this game and really helped push my abilities further than on other previous projects. He definitely mentored me on this one and pushed me to make every part of it better than maybe where I would have started. So I always give him a little bit of credit here because as an art director, he did his job. He pushed his artist further than maybe I would have taken it in the beginning. But You know, I'm real proud of the thing, and I'm thankful that Paul pushed me, and maybe at times, you know, in the heat of like trying to get stuff done. Okay, yeah, I know it's got to be better. I'll make that part better, you know. So we always go that extra mile, but Paul helped push me to the end of that mile. I wrote this. Is it all about the 15 drop targets? I mean, how many drop targets? What's the record number of drop targets in a game? 20? So, I mean, 15 drop targets, it's incredible. And I think that's accurate. I think I counted right. But, you know, I think that's one factor of this game that maybe helps push it to that level. What do you think, Ward? He's speechless. Thanks. So Dunkin' Donuts, those of you that are familiar with Dunkin' Donuts, they have a byline, and it says, what are you drinking? Okay. So the first time we went to the store where they had the sign up on the door, my wife looked at the sign, and she read, what are you drinking? I like to share that. She'll be here tonight. Don't tell her I said anything. I guess the mysterious theme. Oh, good night, Ward. Ward just fell off the chair. What are you drinking? Nice timing. Who was that? That was great. Oh, there you go. It's Charlie, of course. The mysterious theme, right? I mean, and eventually I've been telling people what I want to do with thanks to James Laughlin, I want to take some of my background sketches that I had and that James helped connect me to again, and I want to like build a front story for Fathom. I want to do a lead in, almost like a coffee table comic book, a graphic novel approach. And maybe do a coffee table book someday when you know I have time, and do like a lead-in story and maybe kind of build upon this whole thing, because when we did the brochure, we definitely kind of posed it as a storyline. What is really happening in this mystery? And so this was like the lead-in to the game. And Kevin O'Connor did the artwork for the brochure. There is some... Kevin O'Connor was responsible for this artwork, and I got credit for the storyline. So someday I hope to put a nice little book together and maybe create like a graphic novel that kind of builds upon the story and maybe takes it a little bit further. So if people are interested, we can talk about that later. But, you know, it is a mysterious theme, and Gary Flower pointed out many years ago at one of the first expos that this is the first backlash depicting a potential murder. Murder. So, really? That was my answer. Really? Oh, I didn't intend to be the first to depict a murder, but I guess it happened, so... But he's not dead. You know, he's on the back glass. He's not dead yet. So we hope. We hope. So sorry for the sideways thing, but, you know, format. The cool underwater color scheme, you know. I mean, Mark Wayna pointed out to me that the two best games to put in your collection next to each other are Fathom and... Medusa, thank you. Appreciate that. Because of the color schemes, Medusa is fiery orange and reds and yellows, and the cool color scheme of Fathom next to it is they just complement each other, and when you put them next to each other in your collection, it's like amazing. So that's nice to hear. Maybe the success of Fathom is based in the easy-to-pronounce name. When we were building this game, everybody that worked at Bally was like, hey, is that Phantom stuff done yet? How's that Phantom thing going? What's going on with Phantom? I'm like, it's Fathom, Fathom. You know, the measurement of the depth of the, yeah. So we had a little in-house trouble with that word, getting it pronounced correctly. But anyway. All right. So this was the title that never was. You put me on the project, and I'm gonna twist words around as best I can to make it happen. So this was my contribution. I wanted to call the game Deep Threat. And it hurts no one. I mean, you know, we got big juicy melons. That doesn't hurt anybody. It's a game about farming and about fresh produce. So I figured Deep Threat hurts no one. But I guess the powers that be felt maybe not. But it all starts with a drawing, of course. We all know that. And this is from the archives. What I really, you know, I mean, I played the game numerous times. And when I looked at the drawing by itself the other day, I really liked that shot, what would be a ramp today, right? That shot back up to the top that goes above the lanes and hits those drop targets. I think that's kind of magical. And I'm sure. There's probably other games that had that configuration, but maybe not. Can somebody, you know, chime in on that? I don't know. Elvis? Right. But anything previous to Fathom? Because I always found that pretty rewarding as a player, you know, to get that those three drop targets down. The other ones were cool too because it was just such a smooth shot, but challenging. But I always felt that top shot was pretty cool. Oh yes, you are, Dave. Ward's drawing here dated December 23rd. I don't know. I can't see it from here. 1980 something. His original working title for the game was Barracuda. Again, the historians in the room know better than myself when Barracora came out, so I don't know how close that was. So that may have been a reason why we just didn't call it Barracuda, but at the same time, it really wasn't about a Barracuda. So there was a lot more going on. But I did include a Barracuda front and center on the backlash just to pay homage to Ward's original title. Are we all awake? Am I talking too softly, or do I need to step it up a little bit? I thank people, Jay and all the people that post up to the International Pinball Database for pictures that they've put up because it makes my presentation skills a lot easier. So thanks to everyone that posts up. I just saw this one and I thought, you know, it's just a nice shot. And that guy's not dead yet. He's not dead yet, Gary. That's where that is. Ward, if you were here, what about these outlanes? That's kind of a signature thing for you, right?
Yeah.
And here's a well-worn playfield from the International Pinball Database. I want to make it bigger than it is. Well, I know. I guess the internet's bigger than international. The drop targets. Look at all of them. I found this on the internet. I don't know. Maybe obviously somebody here knows what it is, but maybe it's a topper or maybe it's just a little placard. Scorecard, thank you. So, 1981, 3,500. So here, this graphics thing, Kevin O'Connor, just to clarify, Kevin really didn't do any of the art on the game, but he did do those graphics on the brochure. So just in case anybody was ever wondering. There are moments in history where Kevin and I collaborated and Kevin would do inks of Playfields once he was freelancing. But this was at a point where Kevin was still an in-house artist with us. And once he went to freelance, we would feed him the Playfield drawings as pencil sketches, just like the comic book industry. And Kevin would then ink those for us. So his hand is on many Playfields, even though the in-house artist would design the actual art for the Playfield and give him a tight pencil to work from. Then Kevin would take that and do the finished ink and be paid handsomely for that. That's another one. I guess that's another scorecard, huh? There you go. Thank you, Dave. So he's not dead yet either. That's me when my hair was actually dark and my beard. That's a really bad shot, but that's a scan from a Polaroid. I've mentioned this at other seminars. We used to take Polaroid shots, you know, those cameras that spit out an instant picture, and we would use them as reference. And I kept a lot of the reference shots that we took back in those days, and they're very humorous to go back and look at. I've included some of that in previous seminars, and maybe someday I'll just do a whole seminar on funny pictures. That's what we referred to them as, funny pictures, because a lot of them, out of context, were very funny. So as you can see, just like this one, it's kind of funny. Kind of. There's another one. So I'm right here, I'm holding the office coffee pot to get the volume needed for, you know, drawing accurately enough the guy holding onto the tail of the mermaid. There it is, deep threat. See, I was pushing hard. I got to this point. Here's a sketch that I composited from the files that James helped me with. And I got it this far. Here we are, deep threat. Let's go with it. But we did not take it any further than this. Yes, sir?
Yes, question.
Okay.
In the 70s, the designers had a question that was almost completely done before the artists who got involved and came up with the theme, and that changed. This is right in that transition period. How much of the place was already finished before you came up with that theme set and that?
Yeah. Ward would say, well, you're right, and this was still in that era. Norm Clark and company would have a lineup of games, and they'd be like, all right, this one's ready for art. And this was still of that era. So his game was pretty much designed. Maybe the bonuses, the blue and green bonuses, we might have tweaked that so that it kind of fit with the color scheme and stuff like that. Definitely this was one of those styles of games where the design department had a stable of games ready to go, and then Norm would put the blessing on this one, and they would go to art. So, yes, that's part of that vintage.
So were there any plastic parts, like the inserts or wing dividers, where you would know color there, or
that's a great question, Dave. I don't know. Yeah, that we might have. I mean, you know, although we were a bit in the austere, you know, era at that time, so I don't know if we would have, you know, popped for a special color, but maybe there was no cost involved, just a different pigment. So it's very possible that we did do a color for that. During this era, things were stepping up a little bit as far as speed goes, because the runs were short. So I would say I probably had, I don't know, maybe five months to work on it, or 6 months, something like that. So, no, not a whole heck of a lot of time. So, yeah, when, like I said earlier, when Paul was pushing, okay, you got to make her look prettier. You got to do this. You got to do that. I'd be like, hey, I got to get it done too. You know, so there's that. You know, where you're in production mode, but you want to make it as best as you can. So this is a again saved from the archives. a little bit of a, that's my handwriting. So this was just some ideas that I was coming up with, or maybe the, you know, Ward and I or whoever was in the room at the time were writing down for, you know, speech. So there's like a male voice up there, prepare to dive, first dive, second dive, third dive, you know. So danger, cave area. So I don't know. It, back then, working in speech to the game was all new to us, and we didn't have a whole lot of room to work. So things had to be short and sweet. And then when the speech came back, it was what it was. We couldn't go back to the recording studio and go, hey, make that better, you know. So it was just we got it and we put it in the game and that was it. Yes. Yeah, in this particular instance, it was different for every game. And as the history of pinball progressed into the 80s and 90s, things began to develop differently. But at this point in history, you know, it was a blank slate, and you know, themes would be talked about between marketing and design and art to figure out what would be, you know, the best approach at that time. You know, or a license. I mean, Bally was licensing then, so you know, there's that potential of getting a license. So then we got to, you know, work that in, and if the timing is right and all that stuff. And licensing back then wasn't what it is today, you know. I mean, licensing is like a major part of pinball now. But back then, it was sporadic, you know. There was this one, the Harlem Globetrotters, and then, you know, later on the Rolling Stones or whatever the case may be at Bally. You know, it was a little bit different. But, yes, blank slate for sure. I mean, I got that drawing that I showed you earlier, just a blank drawing, and then you just sit there and, you know, do this a lot. And, you know, I had a bigger beard then, so it was more like this. But, yeah, so there's a lot of pondering before you get started, you know. And then I think between, again, I'll give a little credit to Paul. I think because the working title was Barracuda, I think we put our heads together and said, hey, an underwater theme would be cool. And Paul at that time was all about the, you know, the packaging, making sure the whole package worked together, you know, and I learned that from Paul. And he had done Centaur, right? And, I mean, just the idea of going to black and white with a little red in there, you know, it's genius. I as soon as he told me that he was going to do that, I'm like, yeah, that's you know, a great, great idea. So, and again, I think it was that overview vision of, you know, if we're doing an underwater theme, the whole package is going to have a certain palette to it, you know. So I think that's, with the working title of Barracuda and then, you know, having that color scheme thing, and I think probably Medusa, again, about the same vintage, was that, you know, let's keep this all in one kind of palette, you know. And so it's kind of a nice triptych when you think about it. If you got Centaur, Medusa, and Fathom, you know, there's a certain look to that kind of was Paul's vision, you know, as an art director. So I don't know if that answered the question, but close. The in-house art department at Bally was a pretty well-oiled machine with Paul at the helm too. He was a very strong manager, and he had very close ties with marketing, and with design too. So, kind of what, you know, if he said something and told marketing and design that this is going to look great and this is what we should do, it kind of stuck that way, you know, in that vintage, in that era, you know. So, it was kind of like a collaborative effort, but not as much as it is today, you know. And so there was a little more autonomy within the art department to you know, kind of do what we felt would be visually best for the game. So. Well, there could have been. I can't recall any off the top of my head, but definitely, you know, there can be moments like that where it's not a good direction, you know. And I can talk about that a little bit coming up too, but definitely, you know, that's it was at this point in time, there was a lot more autonomy within the art department and marketing to do what we felt was best for the visual part of the game. So here's some other alternate names. Deep Threat. So yeah, I kept putting that on top. I got to go over there.
Sequa.
I don't know where Sequa came from, but I guess it didn't stick. So Ward, I think Ward's first game. I may be wrong here, but Fathom might have been Ward's first game. Dennis, do you know? Yeah. I mean, it's a heck of a first game. Maybe that's kind of like the first album syndrome with musical artists, right? I don't know, but it was cool. So BMX started life as a license. We were trying to land, oh boy, my brain just went dead. See, this was happening when you don't prepare. The famous movie, E.T., thank you, Greg. E.T., BMX started life as E.T., we were trying to land that license, and something happened where the movie company said, you know what, we're not interested. So quickly, we had to come up with an alternate theme, which became BMX. Because at this point in time, we were all very busy, and we were working quickly to get games done, we tag-teamed this one. So I did the back glass, and Kevin O'Connor did the playfield graphics, and Margaret Hudson did the plastics, and Pat McMahon did the cabinet art. So four of us had four like unique visions for this game, but I think it hangs well together. If you've ever seen the game, I hope it doesn't look like four artists worked on it, but maybe it does. But we always tried to keep one artist vision straight through the project so that it would have that cohesiveness. But this was a little bit unique in that we needed to get this game done faster through our department, so four of us collaborated. Yes? Hey, we were in the business of making pinballs, so I think we were just trying to maximize every game possible. I don't know if it was a filler for like the next bigger game. I don't know how that worked back then, but it's possible. Yeah, right. Not enough people saw BMX, so it later was resurrected as that other game. I've said this before. You've probably heard it before, and if you haven't, you're going to hear it now. Bally, at the time, saw what Gottlieb was doing with their back glasses. And sales said, hey, we should do that too. And I said, no, we shouldn't. I want to do artwork. I'm an artist. I'm not a photographer. And they were like, no, we need to do that. Oh, and plus, we own the Chicago Health Clubs now, so we're all about fitness. So we need to tie this in and do something with Miss Universe and make it happen. And okay, so we made it happen. So, as I've said in the past, this is not one of my prouder moments in pinball graphics, but it is what it is, and the rest is history. Yes, Dave?
Well, in general, I think the Valley Art Department certainly had a lot of prouder moments in pinball graphics. I think that the book, were you hearing on a regular basis about what was this Atari art?
Not really. This was the departure. This was the Gottlieb thing was something that Bally was recognizing, and at a time when Bally was a little, you know, not really strong in its cohesiveness because they were spreading so far out this way, and they were leaving pinball in the dust. So that's my opinion. It's not any fact or anything, but that's just my view of things at the time. But so I think, you know, it's just a matter of they saw what Gottlieb, they thought, oh, they're putting photographs, and that looks like success, so let's do that. So Dungeons and Dragons, Ward also gets credit for. Again, I mentioned earlier the outlanes and these flex save outlanes. It's became kind of a bit of a signature for Ward. Pat McMahon is credited with the artwork on this. He did a nice job. However, the back glass was licensed through the people that did Dungeons and Dragons. That's hard to say at this time in the morning. Let me just stop for a moment. No donuts, just coffee. So, yeah, and this was, you know, kind of like the first game with a topper on it, I guess, maybe. I don't know. I've just thrown that out there for discussion. But it was, you know, an interesting game. I don't know how well it did. I'm sure Jay knows exactly how well it did. And there's the part of the play field. And I would have asked Ward about his design, you know, what, you know, all that stuff, but 2000. Well, was that in that funky cabinet? I don't know, you know. That, yeah. No. No. Yeah, we're sorry about that, you know. Some of us are, but I mean, if Patla was here, he'd have the good reason of why we did it like that. And I heard the story that the German distributor said, we need to fit these games in the back of a Mercedes station wagon, and we can't fit it in unless you do something with the cabinet that can make it go in easier. I don't know how true that is, but I'll throw it out there. Mousing around. So when we got over to Williams, I think this might have been Ward's first game that was a Bally Williams game. A fun little piece, and you know, lighthearted, and Pat McMahon did the artwork. It's an interesting game. How many people have a Mousing Around? Anybody? All right. Yeah. Well, Ward's a good player. Ward grew up, Ward's father worked at Bally, and so Ward grew up with pinball in the house. So at a very young age, Ward was an excellent player. And so a lot of his game designs probably reflect the fact that he was able to, you know, handle the ball very well. So thus things like flex save and stuff like that with an extra button. So because he got bored with just, you know, two buttons. So I'm putting words in his mouth, but his mouth isn't here, so it doesn't matter. Riverboat Gambler. I'm sure there's a few of you out there that have a Riverboat Gambler in your possession. Good game. Yeah. A lot of buttons down here. I guess I'm not that familiar with the game. Dennis and I were working on Dr. Dude at the time. So we went down to the New Orleans show with Dr. Dude, and on the other side of the booth was a Riverboat Gambler. And there's Gilligan's back right there. And her front. this was a... I remember sitting up in the conference room with our CEO, Neil, and we had a discussion about this license, and I felt, you know, this license, this TV show has been around forever. And, well, why can't we just, you know, this is a good theme. It's a good family theme, you know, and all that kind of good stuff. And Neil did not believe it. So he got his son or daughter or somebody on the phone. And he goes, I'm going to prove to you that this young person who should be playing pinball does not know what Gilligan's Island is. He goes, I'm calling right now. So he puts the person, son, daughter, whatever, on speakerphone. He goes, can you tell me if you know what Gilligan's Island is? And the person said, yeah, I watch it all the time. He was like, thank you. Hung up. Click. But so we licensed it, and, you know, some people might think, yeah, Gilligan's Island. But, you know, as for a home use piece now, you know, it's kind of a fun little theme. So that was the story about Gilligan. And we got to, you know, it was like, you know, childhood, you know, there he is. He's right here, and he's got the costume on. So there we are. There's Ward. That's what Ward looks like, in case you've never seen Ward. So when you see him on the street, maybe that mustache is gray now, but you can say, hey, Ward, where were you? Please. So, and there's me with a pink shirt. Yikes. And, well, it was the 80s, so I guess pink was okay. But anyway, there we all are. John Hay and Dan Lee, the programmer. John Hay did the music. And John Yossi did the artwork. I guess this started life as a Dan Langlois layout called The Brain. And management was about, you know, they were like, really, the brain? What is that? What does that mean? What are we doing with the brain? I don't, you know, they kind of were a little bit squishy about calling a game The Brain. So that's when things started heading towards Gilligan's Island. And Ward gets credit for this 007 game. I'm sorry, the name of it is... Thank you, GoldenEye. I guess he did it. If it says it in the database, I guess he did it. And I was going to ask him, because I didn't know he did this game. So, but maybe we'll never know. And I was also going to get Ward to do an impression on Party Zone. This little football player guy and the target that's near him was Ward's voice. Saying, Party Zone, where's the end zone? So that was Ward's voice. That was his contribution. Oh, a short film. Anyway, before I end, I want to thank everybody. I want to thank James Laughlin. I want to thank Ward Pemberton. And I want to thank the, you know, everybody that posts up to the database. So thanks for all that. And thank Rob for having us here again. So, the movie. Let's do that real quickly. And please come visit us out at the Whiz Bang booth. We've got Wonelli out there. She's sold. But we are going to be talking about a production, a potential production. This is not an announcement, but it is potential. And if you're interested, please stop by the booth, and we're taking names. So if you have an interest in owning a... I may have shown this before, but I'll show it again. When Gilligan, Bob Denver, came to Williams, it was a big event, and the factory got to see him, and it was a cool day. And so I have a little short film here with Steve Kordick.
You like the equipment that we're putting out? Oh, hell, we had one hell of a fall. We do this every day.
You know what you're doing, too.
Well, we have the.
Do you want a picture?
We have the facilities. We have the capabilities.
Okay, let's go.
The staff that we have here of design engineers, of software people, graphic artists, and mechanical people, they're above anything and everything, anything in the industry. That's why we're in a position that we are today.
Yes, sir.
And we're very proud of it, and we're happy, and we're glad that you're going to be a part of it.
Well, me too. You know, they say when you get, you know, pinball machine named after you, that's it.
It's the pinnacle.
Hey, you're up on top.
That's it.
And you're dealing with the best out here. You got Roger so here and some of the designers we have here. I'll guarantee you that you're talking to people that are knowledgeable in this industry.
That's what I'm glad. I'm glad that
we've been around for a while too.
Yeah, I know. Well, I just bought a pinball machine this last year.
Good
for Harlem Globetrotters.
Harlem
Globetrotters. Ah, good game. That's when we used to be competitors. Now we're sister companies.
But it's a good game.
It's a good game. Want to get a game like Space Mission or Grand Prix?
Now you're talking. I see. I'm just getting into these. I don't know.
Very good.
What makes a machine like better than another machine? Just the graphics?
The attractiveness, first of all. Well, it's got to be attractive to the people that are playing it. After all, you know, if a person is attracted to the graphics, to the artwork, and attracted to the new features on the game, concerned about wanting to play it, see what he's going to accomplish, and then if he plays it, he gets a certain amount of satisfaction, which is very, very important.
Right.
He'll put another coin in.
I know, it's designed to put another coin in. I love that.
Hey, that's the idea.
It fascinates me, because I never, you know, as a kid, I played him and stuff, but Christmas Eve after my kid went to bed, I gave him the pinball machine.
Yeah.
I played it, right? And I got $575,000. I went, what is this simple little game? The next game I played, I got $35,000.
Well, we provide... we provide entertainment.
Yeah.
We provide the kind of entertainment that satisfies the individual.
I think you have
that's good.
I think you're going to have a big resurgence, too.
Oh, yeah. I think so.
I think the 90s are going to...
We've done very well at the show, too, in Las Vegas. I'm sure you're aware of that.
Excellent.
Well, we should. Yeah, we have the equipment.
Yep.
And we have the backing of good designers, and that's important. That's all.
Let me show you the game.
Oh. There
you
go.
Quintessential Steve Kordick, still pitching pinball at 85 years old. God bless him. Thanks. I hope you had fun, and I hope you learned something.